At UNLV, less than 0.5% of the student body is made up of indigenous people. That's about 6 times less than their population in the state. And state lawmakers have addressed that with a new law just signed by the governor to provide free tuition to Native Americans who enroll in Nevada colleges. But what else is needed? In part 4 of Native Nevada, our podcast on indigenous issues in the state, we look deeper into some of the factors impacting those students.
Probably the biggest event was when Charlie Kirk decided to come to UNR. And he's kind of the head of the Turning Point movement, which is a very far-right movement that everyone was writing petitions against for their actions against several diverse communities. You know, basically anyone that wasn't white, straight, and a Republican. They hated you. And so we're sitting in the center and we're doing like finger painting and they're having their rally in the next room over. The center is made with a bunch of glass walls. They had started hitting the glass and screaming and videotaping and just yelling a bunch of profanities. And it kind of just reminded me of like when they had those museums that they would keep people of color in, you know, like little children. Like that's essentially what it was. And I just remember being so furious and the university not doing anything about it.
This is Native Nevada, KNPR's podcast about the indigenous peoples of the region now known as the U.S. state of Nevada. I'm your host, Richard Boland. In this episode, we continue our look at education, turning from K through 12 to higher ed. You'll hear how Native students at Nevada's land-grant institutions are fighting to get the education and representation that they deserve.
Okay, Angamaheji, my name is Abby Bennett. I am the current president of the Indigenous Student Organization at UNR. I am pursuing a bachelor's in microbiology and immunology, and I am Washoe, Paiute, and Yokut.
Hayu Manuma, Narayan Boon Menania, Nagai Tukutanuma. Nuya Tanuma Apeganu to Ape Wabe. Dame Sakwa Nanano Duno Yagwe. How are all of you? My name is Ryan Boone and I am from the Trout Eater people of the Northern Paiute Nation. I am an advocate of our people's language and I look forward to sharing stories and discussing ways we can work together to increase Native student success in the state. I am the former president of the UNLV Native American Student Association and one of the co-founders of the Nevada Native Higher Education Council.
Abby and Ryan are among the 0.3% of the UNLV student body and the 0.7% of the UNR student body that are American Indian or Alaska Native. That isn't a lot of people, and like their K-12 counterparts, Native college students aren't doing as well as those from other ethnic groups and nationalities.
So I want to start with this statistic. At the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, only 22.2% of Native students graduated from UNLV in fall 2018, according to a 6-year graduation plan. It's a shocking statistic. How do we get that number up, right?
Ryan and Abby, and the student organizations they're part of, believe lack of representation is a big part of the problem. Native students don't see people like themselves at any level of higher ed, from the students, faculty, and administrators, to course content and school culture.
I know I'm speaking about UNLV in particular. When you come to the campus, you don't see another Native student unless you really, really seek them out.
Solutions to this problem, Ryan says, are right under school administrators' noses. But administrators have to commit to making changes.
There's not much being done to really support our student base. You see support coming from organizations like NASA, which is the Native American Student Association at UNLV, the American Indian Alliance, as well as the Native American Program Coordinator. You see support coming from these groups of people dedicated to supporting Native students, and that's great. We need more done. We need to see support from officials and departments on our campuses that aren't dedicated to specifically supporting Native students.
Ryan points to recruitment as one area where this student support is lacking. He recalls an event he did with the Native American Student Association a few years ago.
We were tabling at the Moapa Band of Paiutes powwow, and we had these little goodie bags full of school supplies for the students. One of the Moapa representatives came up to us and said, "This is the first time we're seeing UNLV come to our tribe. And that shocked us.
The tribal community he's talking about, the Moapa Band of Paiutes, is just 60 miles from UNLV's campus.
This happened just 2 years ago, and this really exemplifies the situation that we have, and we need to work to pressure the university system as well as the Nevada system of higher education to really support Native students to get out of their comfort zones. Don't just go to K through 12 public schools, but also travel to tribal reservations as well and recruit to students there, meet them where they are at, you know?
Ryan also laments the loss of a UNLV summer program that used to bring Native students on campus for an overnight stay. It was a way of introducing them to college life, to make it seem less daunting. That program hasn't been operating since around 2019.
I will really highlight this strongly. Native student recruitment can't occur without connections and recruitment being built between university officials and the students themselves, as well as the families.
Research backs Ryan up on this. In 2009, Eastern Washington University professor Raphael Guillory led a landmark study of Native American students at U.S. land-grant universities. Guillory and others have found that relationships between universities and tribal communities are critical to Native students sticking with their studies all the way through graduation.
So my name is William Bauer. I'm an enrolled citizen of the Round Valley Indian Tribes in Northern California.
William is a history professor at UNLV.
I also serve as program director for the American Indian and Indigenous Studies program.
He also chairs the American Indian Alliance,
which is the Native faculty and staff alliance on campus. I've kind of noticed like two or three areas where I think that we could kind of improve our outreach to Native students. And I think one is just in terms of kind of admissions and trying to go out and to recruit Native students to UNLV. For instance, a couple of years ago, I attended the American Indian Education Summit, which is an annual event held every year in Nevada, and it was in Reno. I went to the event, and sure enough, the University of Oregon sent down someone from their admissions department to recruit some of the high school students who attended there, and then UNLV didn't.
Besides having recruiters meet Native students where they're at, the American Indian Alliance would also like schools in the Nevada System of Higher Education, or NSHE, to honor their government-to-government relationships with tribal nations. Currently, most NSHE schools aren't in regular communication with the tribes and the communities they serve. There are models for such relationships. William says that during his time at the University of Wyoming, liaisons from both Shoshone and Arapaho nations met regularly with the university president. These relationships do more than establish recruitment pipelines. They also help universities understand what their Native students need to succeed. College advisors who spend time in tribal communities can identify barriers that can be surmounted with services such as childcare, transportation, or Wi-Fi. Sandra Mitrovich was one such advisor.
Hey, Tanani, Nikki Amsa, Sandra Mitrovich. I am an enrolled citizen at the time, Maidu, in Northern California, specifically from a town called Oroville, California, and a descendant of the Yamani Maidu in what would be considered Feather River area near Quincy. My fabulous, what I would say, location here that I'm in is what's traditionally from Numu and Washoe territory here in Reno, Nevada, so Northern Nevada. But of course, you know, want to recognize our Niwi and Nuvu people across the state. So really glad to be able to participate and live and just honor the people of this land as well.
For 7 years, Sandra was UNR's outreach and retention coordinator focused on Native students.
I always tell the story that I had several students reach out to me that had 12 credits left to go to get the bachelor's. They had maybe some financial stuff that they didn't clear from another institution and they wanted to transfer to finish out their degree here. But some of them were like, I don't know where to start. How do I do a petition? I don't know how to do that. Out of those students, two of them now have their master's. And then the other, I have another two that are enrolled in graduate programs. And I look at that and I say, that all started with a conversation. That started with someone saying, I'll help you initiate the process. Let's get you through. And let's also find some funding for you. For one of those individuals, it was gas money. I think that's another thing I found across the board. No assumptions. You can't make assumptions about any given student. You have no idea what their story is, what their background is, and what they're going through to get to this point.
Sandra says she logged countless miles on her car, driving to tribal communities in UNR's jurisdiction. Outreach like that is necessary to build trust.
When you have a level of distrust with, you know, the federal government, it's really hard to then engage.
When talking about American Indians and the history of education, I think we often go back to something like the Federal Off-Reservation Boarding School, where American Indian children were taken literally right from their homes and put in schools far away from their homelands, right? In the 1930s, my grandmother attended the Carson City, the Stewart Indian School in Carson City, Nevada, which is far away from where she had grown up on the Round Valley Reservation in Northern California.
Native Nevada listeners will remember hearing in our last episode about the Stewart Indian School in Carson City. Not long after we finished that episode, news came out about a previously unknown mass grave at a boarding school in British Columbia, Canada. The site holds the remains of 215 Native children.
And often those educational policies were intended or had the effect of also kind of being part of the way in which the United States dispossessed indigenous peoples of their lands. And so it's often you can't kind of separate kind of this longer history of kind of colonial education from the processes by which the United States dispossessed and took indigenous peoples' lands. And so I think there's always this kind of difficult relationship between this tension in American Indian history and education.
Overcoming this history requires a lot of work by school officials like Sandra Mitrovich. Having a familiar face from the local college pay regular visits to tribal communities shows that the school cares about the students' well-being.
You don't just send an email. You go to the community. You spend time in active listening with your partners. You spend time at Pyramid Lake Junior Senior High School talking to teachers, talking to educators, hearing what they want from us at the higher education level. They're the ones that are working with those students to get them to higher education. So we need to go into community and talk with the families, talk with the parents, the grandparents, the community members, the leaders, and say, you know, we want to build this strong college and career pathway program. What do you need, you know, us to do?
The research also shows that a good way to motivate Native students is to understand why they went to college to begin with. Many in the Guillory study said it was so they could return to their communities after their studies and make a positive difference. Knowing this, universities have an opportunity to support programs and scholarships tailored to the indigenous communities they recruit from.
Part of what we're asked to do at the university is to kind of engage in research. And I think kind of working with tribal nations in Nevada on whatever kind of activities that they think are needed, what other kind of research programs that tribal nations in Nevada believe that they need to be done, I think that would be another kind of step in this direction.
But knowing what the tribes want requires good working relationships between the institutions and tribal governments. Besides spending time in tribal communities, while she was at UNR, Sandra worked across campus to engage anyone who was interested in helping on Native issues. She started and ran many programs meant to improve recruitment and retention of Native students. Those students have written blog posts and posted on social media praising her availability and hard work on their behalf.
Thank you, the Center, Sandra Hedrick Mitrovich, Stephanie Wyatt, the Native American alumni, and all others who helped put on the Native American Graduate Celebration.
To build on the work of Sandra Hedrick Mitrovich and help create a more inclusive environment on campus for our Indigenous students, their families, and our communities.
Also, thank you to Sandra for asking me to share my undergraduate story.
Thank you, Sandra Hedrick Mitrovich. Special congratulations to my hardworking nieces.
On behalf of the first ever Indigenous Research Institute for Student Empowerment.
Proud of you all. Hashtag UNR graduates.
Still, the difference she was able to make was only incremental. Why?
It's a great question. I've asked this question to myself and to other people that work in this space. I'm tired of hearing less than 1%. I'm tired of hearing 50% graduation rate. I'm tired of hearing these same stats about our communities. We have to create the change that we want to see together. That's really what it's going to take.
Sandra says that, in her experience, the state of Nevada does have a network of dedicated people working on behalf of Native students. She points to the Native Education Coalition, the Indian Education Advisory Committee, which is part of the Nevada Indian Commission, and individual point people at institutions throughout the state who helped her immensely when she was at UNR. But she also acknowledges there are too few people in these positions. They're often mired in layers of bureaucracy and funded too meagerly to accomplish what's needed. There are also too few formal agreements between tribal nations and schools, she says. If Enshi were more attentive to Native students, then the possibilities for those students would be endless.
When I came into that position, there was a $10,000 operating budget overall for all the initiatives under the center. I was running my programming through personal and private funding, about $12,000 every year is what it took me to run the Intertribal Higher Education Program. That was through personal fundraising. Avery can attest to this, taco sales, everything else that we could find, right? In partnerships and private funding. And I have to thank my family a lot for that private funding, but other places to get the programming that we needed every single year. Thankfully and fortunately, towards the end of my time, we were afforded a budget that did increase at the end, which was wonderful for all the initiatives in the center. And of course, we went into a pandemic. So
a law that passed in the 2021 Nevada State Legislature is a good start. Known as the Tuition Waiver Bill, it exempts members of tribes located in Nevada and their registered descendants from paying tuition and fees at all of the state's 2- and 4-year colleges and universities. All of the people we talked to for this podcast think this new law will go a long way toward encouraging Native students to attend Nevada's institutions of higher ed. But then, what happens once they get there? When we come back, Native students talk about campus life and what they're doing to make it better. You're listening to Native Nevada from KNPR. I'm Richard Boland. This is Native Nevada, KNPR's podcast about the indigenous peoples of the region now known as the U.S. state of Nevada. I'm your host, Richard Boland. Before the break, we heard what Native faculty and staff thinks needs to be done to improve recruitment and retention of Native students at UNLV and UNR. We also heard what the research shows. But what about what the students themselves want?
What I would like to start with is sharing a story on how I got involved, how I was recruited within the Native community here in Las Vegas, as well as the Native community at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas.
Here's Ryan Boone, the UNLV student we heard from before the break.
It's a funny story. I have a friend, her name is Paloma Marcos, and I was a sophomore attending ATEC, and she chased me down the hallway into my Spanish class. When I say she chased me into that Spanish class, she did. And she told me about the Native American Student Association at UNLV and encouraged me to get involved. And at the time, I didn't have many Native friends or didn't know much of the Native community at all. So I was scared, to say the least, because also keep in mind, I haven't gone to UNLV in the past, and I'm only a sophomore in high school. So it's a whole new environment for me. It was interesting, comfortable, and wholesome to be in space with other Native students at the university. It was like at 6 p.m. at night, and we ate pizza, talked about events within the community as well as on campus. And from that point on, I got involved.
Here's UNLV history professor William Bauer again.
I think the other thing that I think would be vital is to create space for Native students on campus.
When William was at the University of Oregon, he says Native students had what they called a longhouse, a place to get together, eat, and socialize.
Give them kind of an opportunity, you know, kind of just a kind of a social setting for them to kind of be at.
There's that lack of community. They're going to feel homesick. They're going to want to go back to their communities. That plays a part in why students aren't continuing their education. There is a lack of community, and that needs to be addressed. It's more on the emotional aspects of things, but it's just as important as the hard data. And so when you talk about engagement specifically, it is creating those spaces for Native students to come together and share space. What that looks like, that can be a Native student center that shares resources. And I mean, ultimately, again, just shares space for students to come together. As Natives, we understand our intergenerational trauma, our upbringing, our cultural nuances. Not many other students really understand that.
He would also like to see additional funding for events such as occasional Indigenous socials, an annual powwow, and the Mixed Native UNLV pageant. Even worse than the lack of on-campus gathering places, Native students may have encountered hostile symbols, such as UNLV's Hey Reb mascot. HAREB was retired last year after a prolonged battle over its racist origin. A law passed in the 2021 Nevada State Legislature precludes future adoption of offensive mascots and slogans in public education institutions.
When you look at its history, its connection being a frontiersman, and frontiersmen historically murdering Native Americans, that sends, again, that message to Native students who are looking at the campus. So it is monumental to see this imagery going away as it creates a better space for Native students to engage with each other, to have dialogue, be in community with each other.
In addition to removing offensive symbols, shouldn't universities also include positive ones from their local Indigenous cultures? Here's Abby Bennett from UNR's Indigenous Student Organization.
I would like to see more Native languages present on campus. I know we have Paiute classes. I'd also like to see Washoe. I'd like to see buildings get renamed, you know. Our library could be renamed. I'd like that. Or like the floors of the library could be in a Native language. I'd like to see Native plants on campus with meanings. More presence of artwork. I want a page dedicated to land acknowledgement and history. I want that to be on their brochure when they send it to new students. I want them to be open and honest about the fact that it's a land grant institution. So there needs to be at least some acknowledgement there that this is stolen land, you know? It's not like nobody was there before.
Actions like these are great strides forward, Ryan says, but changing people's attitudes and day-to-day behavior requires a concerted effort on the part of administrators. He tells about something that happened to him in the fall of 2018. A calculus professor told students in the class Ryan was in to,
"You gotta do as the Native Indian and put war paint on."
Ryan went to the dean of the college and pointed out that the professor was reinforcing an offensive stereotype in front of a class of 40 students.
Who, once they go on to graduate and become leaders in their professions, they'll reinforce it to people around them as well.
He asked for mandatory cultural sensitivity training for faculty and staff.
If we're going to continue as one of the most diverse institutions within the country, we need to understand that our students are coming from so many different backgrounds. Our faculty and staff are not. So going back to the story, following my ask for a mandated cultural sensitivity training, what the dean said was, "That's not going to pass. The faculty and staff are not going to want to do that." I'm over here like, that's not the point if they don't want to do it or not. The point is that it needs to happen.
Ryan ended up auditing the class. He tells this story as an example of the need for more inclusivity on campus. Abby Bennett says she's been thinking about how to bridge the gap between her Indigenous student organization and other student groups on campus.
Currently, what I'm thinking would be best is if they had a genuine sit down with the Indigenous student organization and they were required to complete a module on Native history within Nevada. Not the most extreme thing, but I want them to know where the residential schools are. I want them to know what tribes are here. I want them to know what blood quantum is, you know. I want to know them general Native history. I've kind of proposed this idea to the person that I think is going to be ASUN president, and they're kind of soft touch on it. So, you know, it's like kind of trying to convince them that, yes, this is worth it. You need to go past the land acknowledgement. If you're going to represent the student body, you have to know how to represent everyone.
This resonates with something we heard about in our episode on K-12 education, Native erasure.
On one hand, American Indians are often kind of undercounted in the U.S. Census. But on the other hand, there's a longer history in the United States of kind of believing that American Indians are a vanishing people, that they're disappearing. Right. One of the most famous American novels is The Last of the Mohicans, right? This book that kind of portrays or kind of narrates this kind of disappearance of indigenous peoples from North America. And that idea gets kind of perpetuated, I think, throughout 19th and 20th century kind of popular culture, federal Indian policy, these kind of things. And so when I kind of teach, say, American Indian history or indigenous studies at UNLV, I tell the students in the classes is this is not only just for American Indian students. every student, I think, should have some kind of understanding of American Indian history and American Indian sovereignty and American Indian studies related issues. For instance, if you work in government, you need to know that there are more than 20 separate indigenous nations in the state of Nevada, let alone, you know, more than 500 in the United States. And in any kind of governmental capacity, you're going to have to kind of work with those tribes who have special relationships with the United States, with the state of Nevada. And so I kind of incumbent on people to kind of understand and have this kind of broader, at least some kind of understanding of tribal sovereignty, federal Indian law.
Another effort is underway to count and name every kind of student. It's called data disaggregation.
I just wanted to say thank you to Nevada NPR for having me, because I know that I am a guest in this space, and I want to honor that invitation. I want to start with saying that today I'm speaking from the ancestral homeland of the Tongva people at this time. I am acknowledging that the Tongva people as the traditional caretakers of the Los Angeles Basin. My name is Christine Jan Cruz Espinoza. I am a second year PhD student studying higher education at UNLV. I am a first generation American college student, and I'm also the first in my family to be born here in the US. I identify as being a second generation Panay or Filipina American woman.
In the fall of 2019, UNLV created a minority serving institution task force. A professor nominated Christina to be one of the 12 students on it. All 12 are supposed to propose an initiative or start a program or advocate for a policy change. Christina's project is data disaggregation.
It's an effort to give folks an option to make themselves be visible, because otherwise we are rendered invisible in these larger racialized categories that the federal government imposes on us. So this is kind of our way to make sure that we are seen and that we are being counted.
Right now, when NSHE students fill out an application or form and they're asked to check a box next to their race or ethnicity, they have a choice that says something like American Indian or Alaska Native. But the truth is, there are hundreds of different identities subsumed by this classification, many of which are sovereign nations.
What is being collected now, right, is a much larger, like, aggregate or lumped category of Native American or Alaska Native, and then there's also Native Hawaiian or other Pacific Islander. So as of fall 2019, there were 71 Native American and Alaska Native students out of over 25,000 undergraduates at UNLV. Also, as of fall 2019, there were 19 Native American or Alaska Native graduate students out of 5,344 total graduate students at UNLV. So how can more data also illuminate who's here? Right now, we also don't know which tribes are being represented, or if the students are enrolled members of tribes. Are these tribes represented here in Nevada? Are they from outside? We don't know that. That's kind of another question that could be answered. And I think it's also going to be opportunity to also see to highlight really the success of students who are also already here. Because I'm trying to not look at this through a deficit lens either, but also see the opportunity for the students who are already here. And like, I see it as really helping with the sense of belonging in this larger university space.
The one thing that I would want listeners to know about the Native experience on campus is that we're all there. We come from very diverse parts of Indian country. I come from California. My colleague in English comes from Oklahoma. We have students coming from reservations in Nevada. We have students coming from reservations in Southern California. And although we're coming from different parts of Indian country, we're on campus. We're taking classes. We're teaching classes. We're conducting research. We can't attend sporting events. Maybe next year we can attend sporting events. We're a vibrant part of campus and we're here. And just because we're not maybe counted in the same way or kind of that we have smaller numbers doesn't mean we're not a significant and important part of the UNLV experience.
Currently, students are leading a statewide effort to get change instituted at Nevada's colleges and universities. UNLV's Native American Students Association, UNR's Indigenous Student Organization, and others from public colleges around the state have banded together to form NHEC, the Nevada Native Higher Education Council.
I believe it was 2019 fall. Native students from each institution throughout Nevada were invited to the Student Affairs Council. And the Student Affairs Council houses the student affairs officials from each public institution in Nevada. So we had Native students representing each of their organizations at their colleges. And we all had similar things that we saw needed at each of our universities. Again, that's recruitment, retention, engagement. How can the university system best support its Native students? And following that discussion, we ended up founding the Nevada Native Higher Education Council. It supports Native students collectively and individually throughout the state. What we want to do long term is to build that foundation and build that relationship that has long been lost between the university and the community.
The group had to stop meeting during the pandemic, but this spring they started up again. They're busy writing their bylaws and mission statement and talking about what issues they want to tackle first. Ryan says he's been in conversations with Teresa Melendez from the Nevada Native Vote Project and having weekly meetings with state leaders. He believes the group can make a difference. The first, most obvious thing that public universities have to address is the moral issue of how they came to be. UNLV and UNR have both adopted official land acknowledgement statements and posted them on their websites. But for students like Abby and Ryan, this is just the beginning.
Some sort of reconciliation has to occur. What is being done to really support these students is the question. I recognize there isn't a strong Native student base at UNLV. Just because there isn't that strong student base doesn't mean we can be overlooked. We are still here. We are resilient, and we have been here for generations and generations.
You've been listening to Native Nevada, KNPR's podcast about the indigenous peoples of the region now known as the U.S. state of Nevada. This production is made possible by a grant from the San Manuel Band of Mission Indians. Producers are Heidi Kaiser and Joe Shaneman. Assistant producers are Jarrett Work and Avery Wyatt. Sound design is by Regina Revazova of Open Conversation. You can find more episodes wherever you find podcasts. I'm your host, Richard Boland. Thanks for listening.